Thank you, everybody, for braving the snow and coming out. Thank you for having me. This book tells the story of Tehillah, at least the story from my standpoint. I wrote this together with my wife and my father-in-law. Many of you probably had Professor Talbis. Anybody here have?
Yeah.
How'd you do? Right. Anyway, so I can at least vouch for the grammar in the book. He corrected. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about the story of Tehillah per se. The assumption that I'd like you to make for this particular shiur, assume that the Tehillah that we advocate as the Tehillah is the real Tehillah. Meaning it comes from a certain chilazon called the Murex trunculus snail. The color is more or less right. Assume that for now. And you can argue with that, but I'm not saying you have to assume it forever, but assume it for this shiur. Because I want to ask the question, if it really is true that we have the ability now to be mekayim the mitzvah, and again, assuming that this is really the Tehillah that Rabbi Akiva wore and that Moshe Rabbeinu wore, then what do we do now? And that is the topic that I'd like to discuss. Can you reintroduce something into halacha that has been lost? And just to give you a very quick overview, Tehillah was around all the way through the end of the Gemara. In the Medrash already, around the 8th century, there's no more Tehillah v'achshav ein lanu ela lavan sha'Tehillah nignaz. So there's no more Tehillah at the beginning of the Medrash in the 8th century. Most probably in the 7th century it was lost in the upheavals in Eretz Yisrael, when Eretz Yisrael was conquered and reconquered and utterly destroyed so many times. So probably around the year 620, 625, Tehillah was lost. For 1300 years, nobody has Tehillah. And the question is, what is the color of Tehillah? What is the source of the Tehillah? The chilazon, and so on. And there was an attempt about 150 years ago in 1889, 1890 by Rav Gershon Henochleiner from Radzin. He attempted to bring back Tehillah, believing that a certain type of a fish, the cuttlefish, it's a kind of squid, was the Tehillah, was the chilazon. And he was able to get Tehillah out of it and produced his strings. It'll be important for us later on to know that the Radzina Rebbe tried to reintroduce Tehillah according to a certain understanding of what the chilazon was. Mostly, it was not accepted in the halachic world, and by most Jews, except for Chassidei Radzin and Chassidei Breslov, most other Jews did not accept it for many, many reasons. And Rav Herzog, in 1914, wrote a lot about it, but essentially, the new Tehillah, if you will, what we believe is the Tehillah, the answers didn't really fall into place until maybe not even 25, 30 years ago, in 1985, when certain discoveries were made. Okay. Now, the first source that you have is Rav Soloveitchik. But before we get to Rav Soloveitchik, I want to say what I think the default position with respect to halacha might be. And maybe after we read Rav Soloveitchik, and especially, I really have been obsessing about this for many, many, many years now, this particular issue about what Rav Soloveitchik said. Sometimes you forget what a chiddush Rav Soloveitchik has here, and I want to point that out today. But I think that let's back off for a second and just say, what is the default position when it comes to evidence, any halacha? I want to know what the halacha, what the case is. So the default position is a very common sense one. Ein l'dayan ela ma shein avro. Right? Whatever the dayan can see, which is both negative and positive. On the one hand, all the dayan has is what's in front of him. He can't know what he doesn't know. And that's okay. This is basically, it's permission. It's a license for a judge to make any decision, dayan. Because you could always make the argument, well, maybe he doesn't know some piece of evidence, right? But the dayan says, I only know what I know. You have to find out as much as you can, but at some point, You're going to have to make a decision, and you're allowed to make a decision, even though it's clear that everybody can only know a finite amount, and there may be things you don't know. So on the one hand, it's saying, Ein l'dayan, the only thing the dayan has is what he knows. But on the other hand, it's a positive thing, right? Anything you can use, whatever your eyes can see, use that to try to find out what's true, so that you can make a psak halacha based on all of the evidence in front of you. And this is a position, again, I think it's the default and common sense position. When I went to speak last week, exactly, I had an audience with Rav Nachum Rabinovitz, the Rosh Hashiva in Male Adumim, a wonderfully brilliant, brilliant man, and a huge, awesome Talmud Chacham, probably the greatest scholar of the Rambam around. And I asked him exactly this position. He said, of course, of course. You look, and you look at the evidence, you weigh it. I said, me, really? Science? Archaeology? History? Chemistry? He said, everything. Psychology? He said, everything you can, you weigh it. You decide what's the plausibility of certain certain positions. What is the probability? He goes, obviously there's going to be risk-reward that you have to evaluate. So when it comes to dine nefashos, if you're going to put somebody to death, you better be very, very sure of the evidence that's in front of you. On the other hand, if it's a question of, is something treif, is something, should you make a bracha, is a schach kasher, whatever, he goes, maybe in that position you might be a little bit more lenient in what you accept. You may not need 100% certainty. In one case, you may need 95% certainty. In the other case, you may need 70% certainty. He goes, it's all common sense. You open your mind, you look, you see, you investigate, you study, you look at everything that's in front of you, and then you make your decision. And I think that this is a very commonsensical way of looking at things, and probably what I would say is really what most people intuitively might say is the way that we paskin halacha. Soloveitchik says differently. The first source that we have here is from... The Rav talks about this in many places. Rav Shechter talks about it in Nefesh HaRav, and this is a quote directly from Shirun Lezecher of Mori. Oh yeah, it is. Okay, the source is here. Yadua ma sheira ben zikni ha-gaon Rav Yosef Dov ha-Levi u'bein ha-admor ha-gaon miradzin b'nogea l'tchelet shebatzisi. So this is why I had to start with the whole history. The Rav's great-grandfather, Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, was a Beis HaLevi, and he was alive in the 1890s, the late 1880s, early 1890s, when the Radziner of Gershon Henoch had his Tchelet. And the Rav is saying, there was a correspondence, there was a discussion between my great-grandfather, Beis HaLevi, and the Radziner. Sheharebi miradzin chitsha v'tziva l'chol chasidav latil Tchelet b'tziziotehen. Rav Gershon Henoch found what he believed was the source of tchelet and told all of his chassidim that they had to wear tchelet. Admor nisag ochiach al yisod arbe rayot. The Rebbe from Radzin tried to prove on the basis of quite a number of proofs and evidence ki atzeva zebe met tchelet, that this dye was indeed tchelet. Rabbi Yosef Dov ta'an kaneged, my great-grandfather, on the other hand, argued v'amar she'ein rayot usvarot yecholot lehochiach shum davar. My great-grandfather, says Rav Soloveitchik, argued, no proof, no evidence, nothing is allowed to change Masoret. What we have is tradition. Sham ein asvara machriya, their logic, asvara, logic, evidence, proof, does not play a part. Kima masora atzma, only the tradition, kachro avot, Rav Soloveitchik is saying two things here. The first thing he's saying is that there is nothing that can change our tradition. We have our tradition on the one side. You give me proof. You give me proof from archaeology, history, astronomy, astrology, marine biology. I don't care what. All the proof in the world on the other hand versus tradition on this hand, nothing changes tradition. That's a position that Rav Soloveitchik puts forth here. The second thing he says is that this was the opinion of his great-grandfather. Now we have to examine both of those. Both of those. And I'd like to look at the second thing first. Was this indeed the position of the Beis HaLevi? Now, we don't know what we don't know, but we do have something that we do know, which is that the Radziner himself talks about the correspondence between the Beis HaLevi and Radziner and himself. It's in his second book, Ein HaTcheles. Radziner wrote three books, Funei Tumnei Chol, Ein HaTcheles, and Psil Tchelet. Psil Tchelet was written after he died by his son. It was put together. Ein HaTcheles, Sfunei Tumnei Chol was written before he went on his journey to Italy, setting out, this is what I'm looking for, these are the characteristics of the Chilazon that I'm searching for. And Ein HaTcheles, when he got back, deals with many, many very, very fundamental and important halachos of Tcheles, and also his proofs why he believes that this sepia squid was the real Tcheles. And in the introduction, he brings down, that's next source, he brings down arguments against his Tchelet, and specifically the argument of the Beis HaLevi. Mehem agona betin debris delita sheyichye masar kol ta'amo v'nimuko b'dvar miyuno b'nitzvat ha'tchelet. The Beis HaLevi explained why he's against this Tchelet. Le'echad mimiyuda'enu sheyichtov yomar lanu mishmo b'zal ha'shom. Okay. The Beis HaLevi, some chassid of the Radziner obviously was bothering the Beis HaLevi. What do you think about my Rebbe's Tchelet? And the Beis HaLevi, instead of just pushing him off, actually said, this is what I want you to go tell your Rebbe. Now, this is what he said. Kvod ma'alato, meaning the Rebbe, lo bi'er b'dvarav ma'zot matzach har shenishkach. What exactly is it that the Radziner Rebbe found? What was lost and what was found? Im mitziat adag, o tzat tzva'o. Was it that the fish was lost, that nobody knew what the fish was? Was it the process that was lost, that nobody knew how to extract the dye from the fish? V'rak achar shekvod ma'alato yivarer zot. After I can understand from the Rebbe exactly what was lost and what was found, haynu aya bezeh davar nishkach v'hi matza. Meaning, tell me exactly what it is that was lost and what it is that you've rediscovered. Az niyeh mechuyavin l'shmoy lav l'lov show. If he can explain that to me, then I will accept the fact that the real tchelet has been found, and I will be the first to wear it, says the Beis HaLevi. Achenim nomar. However, if you're going to tell me ki hadag haya mimtziut, that everybody knew about the fish, and everybody for 1,300 years, shavru aleinu me'az hashem, paskat tchelet b'Yisrael, for all the years the tchelet was lost, everybody knew what the fish was, everybody knew what the process for getting the ink out of the fish was, v'al kol ze lo lavshu avoteinu v'avot avoteinu, and nonetheless, even though all of this knowledge was available, readily available, to all of those great gedolim for all of those hundreds of years, hareu ki'ilu yesh lanu b'kabbalah u'misorah me'avoteinu, ki ze hadag u'tzvao einenu achilazon v'atchelet. Afshu b'kol ha'simanim she'samnu bo chazal, ki afilu nabe kachol rayot lo yo'ilu neged ha'kabbalah v'misorah. What the Beis HaLevi is saying is like this. Radziner Rebbe, in kol hakavod, you're going to tell me that this is a sepia fish, cuttlefish. Everybody knows that there's a cuttlefish. The Rajba knew there was a cuttlefish. The Gra knew there was a cuttlefish. The Rambam knew there was a cuttlefish. You're going to tell me that you get ink out of the cuttlefish? Michelangelo knew that there was such a thing called sepia. Leonardo da Vinci used it. So, everybody knew there was a fish. Everybody knew that you could get the ink out of it. You're coming along and telling me, oh, but now I'm going to be mechadesh that this is tcheles. So the Beis HaLevi says, im kol hakavod, I think that the Rajba was smarter than you, and that all the great gedolim for all those hundreds of years were at least as smart as you are. So it's as if I have a tradition that you're wrong and they were right, because they had the same exact evidence in front of them. They had the same exact knowledge. They had the same exact information. They didn't feel this was tcheles. You're coming along and telling me it is tcheles. Im kol hakavod, I have a tradition that they're smarter than you are. Now, is that what the Rav said, the Beis HaLevi said? That you need a tradition or else you can't enter anything into halacha?
Not exactly.
No. Not only not exactly, I would say the opposite. Because what is the Beis HaLevi saying? He says it again at the end. If you could prove to me that you did have something that they didn't know, then I would be the first to wear your tchevas. And the Radziner picks up on that exactly. The Radziner says, I'm going to tell you what they didn't know. What they didn't know is that sepia ink is, what color is sepia ink?
Blue.
Black. Brown. How do you make tchevas out of brown? Whatever you have to do, the Radziner Rebbe said, I have a chiddush. Nobody else knew the process, exactly what the Beis HaLevi was asking for. You can't tell me that the Bach and the Taz and whoever it is didn't know, knew everything that I know. They didn't know the chemistry that I just learned myself just a few weeks ago, says the Radziner Rebbe. And so now I'm going to show you what is new that was lost, and that's the argument back and forth, a perfectly legitimate, very interesting argument. But not what the Rav seems to say the Beis HaLevi said. The Beis HaLevi again is saying, show me what you can do that's different, what's different than that everybody else knew. If you can't show me anything that everybody else knew, I'm going to keep with tradition. You know what it's like? It's like the question of this. You know, there are people around nowadays who want to make a Karban Pesach. And that's fine. And maybe they have all of the reasons in the world to make a Karban Pesach nowadays. But somebody will argue, the Chafetz Chaim also had all of that information in front of him, and the Chazon Ish had all that information in front of him, and he didn't make a Karban Pesach. So why should all of a sudden you be frumer than all those people for the last 1,000 years that never made a Karban Pesach? That's the argument that Beis HaLevi is making. But it's not the extreme position that the Rav says. Nothing is acceptable in Halacha except for tradition. Now, I heard from Rav Shechter this morning that David Cohen asked Rav Yashiv, I'm not sure about the first name, but I'm sure about Rav Yashiv, which does Rav Yashiv think is the more correct version of what the Beis HaLevi said? What the Rav quotes in his name, or what the Radziner quotes in his name? And they're both secondary sources. We weren't there, we don't know. We don't have anything, of course, in the Beis HaLevi on this. Rav Yashiv answered, it seems more likely that what the Radziner is quoting would be more in line with what the Beis HaLevi would have said, and it's probably more accurate. Okay, fine. But even if we decide that the Beis HaLevi didn't say this, Soloveitchik certainly did say it. And Rav Soloveitchik was also a big Talmud Chacham. So we have to understand exactly what it is that Rav Soloveitchik is saying, and where does it go, and what did he mean by it? And that is something that I have been obsessing over for many, many, many months and years now. Whenever I can grab anybody, I ask them, what do you think the Rav meant? And I've come at least up with three different positions that different people have told me what they think the Rav meant. And that's what I would like to talk about. The first is a very, very, very extreme position. The Rav is saying, they say, somebody once told me, that we're suspect of all sides. Chemistry, archaeology, history, physics, we believe what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us. Anything else, theories change from today till tomorrow. Science, as far as we're concerned, is not even something that's worthy of considering a suffix, and certainly not a vadai. Science is simply not accurate enough. Or they come up with a theory today, they'll come up with another theory tomorrow. I don't believe that that's what the Rav meant. I don't believe that at all. I think that to put those words in the mouth of Rav Soloveitchik is not at all acceptable. And when I said that to Rav Shechter this morning, he also agreed with me. Absolutely not. The Rav would never have said such a thing. I think that we could leave that, although I really do believe that many people today have that attitude. And I have a sister-in-law who's a nurse. She sees many, many, many frum people who come in and say, My rabbi told me that I shouldn't do this treatment or I shouldn't do that treatment. And, you know, why? Now they'll come up with another treatment and I have to go with my rabbi, he knows better than the doctors. She says she feels this attitude very often. I very, very highly doubt that that's what Rav Soloveitchik meant. But there are other versions, other ways of looking at it. One of the ways, and this I heard, for example, from Rav Chaim Moser Chait, Rosh Yeshiva in Richmond, who was Talmud of Soloveitchik. And his attitude was, I would call it the nostalgic attitude, if you will. That there's a certain kedusha to the masoret, to the tradition. The way that things came about, you'll claim that they came about because of a Talmud who understood it this way, or this accident of history, or that, you know, kehila that all of a sudden adopted something for one reason or another reason. The main thing is that the tradition is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants for Judaism today. The tradition has a kedusha to it that is akin to revelation, in a sense. There's revelation at Har Sinai, and then there's revelation through the Masoret. What we have, what the tradition was, is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, and we don't change from the tradition. This is an interesting attitude. I'll talk about it in a second, that why in certain circles this attitude is utterly unacceptable. But it is an interesting attitude. And one of the challenges came from a very interesting place. There's a Rav, a huge Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, named Rav Yitzchak Brand. And he lives in Emmanuel, and he's one of these itinerant Rabbanim. He goes from yeshiva to yeshiva, and he talks in all of these yeshiva. Haredi, goes to B'nai Brak, to Me'er Sharim, he talks in the different yeshivas, and he writes profusely about many, many different things, a lot about politics. And he wrote about Tchelet. And in this article that he wrote about Tchelet, he said, you know, it's so beautiful the way he put it. He said, you know, we Haredim, he said, we make fun of Masoratiyim, right? Traditional Jews. We make fun of them. Tradition. They hold from their tradition. What's their tradition? You make Kiddush on Friday night and then you go to the soccer game. And when you say, but that's not Shabbos, they'll say, ah, but that's what my father did, it's my grandfather did. That's my tradition. That's my Shabbos. He said, we make fun of them, he says, the Haredim. Because they hold from their tradition, but we believe in the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He said, but maybe, he said, we're also Masoratim. The only difference is that our Masorat is to keep Shabbos, and to keep kosher, and to keep tefillin, and mezuzah, and go to the mikvah all the way whenever we go to the mikvah. That's our tradition. He goes, but at the end of the day, they follow their parents, and we follow our parents. What's the difference? And he says the only difference is whether a person will wear tcheles or not. But that, he goes, will prove whether you're somebody who follows the word of God or whether you follow just the tradition. I don't know if you have to go there. But at least the point is that he's making is a very, very powerful point against this attitude that what was is what should be and what will be and what is. And the question is, and you know, it's a tradition that is, it's a criticism that's leveled very often that You hear it all the time, and I think it has validity. Both sides have validity. I don't want to say not. But you hear very, very often that from yeshivish Jews, they don't worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they worship the Shulchan Aruch. There's something to that, and it's a criticism. How valid, how not valid is for everybody to decide. There is another attitude, or another position that some people have in what Rav Soloveitchik meant, and that is this. It's not that science isn't true, like I said in the first case, that we're questioning the whole enterprise of science, but rather that science is inadmissible as evidence in the court of halacha. So, I have a wonderful example that my chavrusa gave me on my way out of Eretz Yisrael. He said, it's a great example of that position. He showed me Yerushalmi in Maisa Sheni. That was Maisa Sheni. Yerushalmi says, there was once a man who had a dream, and in the dream, his father came to him and said, there's a bag of money. His father was dead, right? His dead father comes to him in a dream and says, there's a bag of money that I buried under that tree, and it's Maisa Sheni money. Wakes up in the morning, goes out to the tree, digs it up, and what does he find there? A bag of money. So Gemara asks, is that money, does it have the Kedusha of Maisa Sheni? He has to bring it up to Yerushalayim. The Gemara answers there, Divrei Chalamot, Lo Ma'alin V'lo Moridin. This, the dream, is the dream true? Of course the dream is true. He went and he found the money. Certainly, I mean, maybe now with Freud we would say, who knows what. But certainly the position of the Gemara is, this is a real Nivua, whatever you want to call it. It's a real, you know, it's a real channel that's telling you something amiti, true. Nonetheless, the halacha is that the money doesn't have maisa sheni money, because reality l'chud, and halacha is l'chud. One thing, you know, there's a difference. The reality is, you found the money, it must have been your father, it must have been maisa sheni money. But l'halacha, no. So some people feel that that is exactly what the Rav is saying here. That scientific evidence is inadmissible as part of halacha. Now, two things I want to say. Rav Shechter told me a story this morning which is just beautiful, and it exemplifies exactly this position. He said that years ago there was a Rav who was a Mashkiach at the OU, Rabbi Rubin. Does anybody come here? Okay. So Rabbi Rubin once went to a butcher, and the butcher told him that certain meat that was there was kashered, and so Rav Rubin tasted the meat. He said, the meat's not salty. It couldn't have been kashered. And he gave him a fine, a very substantial penalty. So the butcher took Rav Rubin to court over the penalty. And in court, the butcher quoted this Rav Soloveitchik. He said, you see, Rav Soloveitchik paskin, that scientific evidence is inadmissible in halacha. And so you're tasting the meat is not acceptable. And l'halacha, you can't tell me that that I'm wrong and that it's not salted. That's a big chiddush, but nonetheless, at least many people accepted and understood the Rav in that way. I think this is a... Is this what the Rav meant? I think that there, as I said, not just the butcher felt that way, but there are some other people that feel that way as well. And I'm going to quote you from a fascinating back and forth between Rav Shmuel Ariel and Rav Avinel. Rav Shmuel is a Ram in the yeshiva in Otniel. Anybody know the yeshiva there? Rav Reim HaKohen, the Rosh Yeshiva of Beni. It's a very well-established yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Shmuel is one of the teachers that teaches there. He teaches a lot of introductory courses, and I have to say, Rav Shmuel is one of the greatest things about the yeshiva. He's just such a wonderful, wonderful person, and such a clear thinker, that it's really one of the great things about the yeshiva. Rav Shmuel Ariel. You know Rav Ariel from... there's two Rav Ariels that are brothers. One is from Machon HaMikdash, and the other is the Rosh Yeshiva in Ramat Gan. Right, in Petach Tikva. Anyway, I forget what Rav Shmuel is, the son of one of them. He's the son or the nephew of one of them. Huge, wonderful Talmud Chacham. Rav Shmuel, who, after studying the whole issue, came out very strongly in favor of Tchelas. Rav Aviner is in Beit El, he's Rosh Shiva in Beit El, and he is very against our Tchelas. And so Rav Shmuel and Rav Aviner wrote these letters back and forth to each other. Fascinating letters. If anybody wants to, they can see them on our site in the library. On Tchela.com, we have all of these here. And just reading them is just such a wonderful wonderful piece of intellectual exercise and beautiful learning. But they raise very, very fundamental questions. One of the things that Rav Shmuel raises is this issue of Rav Soloveitchik. This is what he says, and I think it's very interesting. Ta'ana zu, b'nisuach ha-mukhlat shel Gaon Rav Yosef Dov, because this argument that Rav Soloveitchik is making, that scientific evidence is inadmissible in halacha, yotzeret koshi mahuti b'yisodot olam halacha. He says, to me, this causes some very fundamental problems with respect to halacha. He says, because Rav Soloveitchik is not arguing that hochachot madayot are no good. In other words, he's not arguing the first argument, that you can't trust science. He's saying, no, ahefech. even if you have an argument from science, right? Afilu im hochachot yena berurot v'ein kol safek be'amitutan. Even if you have an argument that has absolutely no safek with regards to whether it's true and real or not, bechal zot ein lo yo'ilu l'inyan halacha. He says, according to this position, even if you know it to be true, you're not allowed to use it l'gabei halacha. He said, this tfisa kazu yotzer nituk bein halacha l'bein hamitziut. This type of an attitude creates a chasm, a disconnect between halacha and reality. Yeshna mitziut amitit. On the one hand, you have the reality, which is really true. Which we use our senses and our experimental abilities and our logic to determine. That's reality. And on the other hand, you have halachic reality, which only allows certain types of proof, and ignores other types of proof. He said this, halacha kavyachol bonera mitziut medume. Halacha is basically, essentially, according to this understanding, is building up an artificial reality, she'ena emet, a virtual reality, which is not true, which is not truth. Nitztarech lomar, right? Mivchina ilchatit, ha'im zuhi torat emet? He says, is this what we mean when we say the phrase torat emet? And Rav Aviner writes back on this point. Again, there are many, many points that they argue about. But on this point, he concedes that, in fact, this is the position of Rav Soloveitchik. He says back, Rav Aviner, right? This that you say, tivatzer na shtei amitot shonot, this that will, that there are going to be, according to this position, that there are going to be basically two different truths, emet madait ve'emet hilchatit, scientific truth, halachic truth. Hinei ala gon Rav Yosef Tov Soloveitchik, atzmo en kasha. The Rav, you can't ask about Rav Soloveitchik. Ki besifro, ish halacha, who must be a rov and philosoph, ish halacha, in a midah chesed, the tiyor mitziyot. He says that's exactly what the Rav basically says in ish halacha. He goes, omnam zeo chidush gadol. He goes, it's true that this is a very, very big chidush. It's a very, very difficult position, if you will, to take. But it is the position of salvation. And many people accept this. I heard, for example, Rav Slifkin, who wrote recently about exactly this attitude, and he said, there are two worlds. There's the halachic reality, and then there's the scientific reality. In the scientific reality, just for those of you who did Daf Yomi a few weeks ago, we got to the famous Daf of Lice, right? That according to the Gemara, they spontaneously generate. Science doesn't accept that. Halacha does accept that. And according to the halacha, you can kill lice on Shabbos. And according to science, they have eggs just like every other creature. So what are you going to say in this case? Are you going to say science is wrong? Hard to say. Are you going to say halacha should be changed? That's a very difficult thing to say. Halacha should change. So people accept it in different ways and deal with it in different ways. But essentially, this is a position. You have a scientific reality, you have a halachic reality. Needless to say, although this is a fascinating attitude in and of itself, I don't know if everybody would accept it, and it certainly is a huge, huge chiddush that Rav Soloveitchik brings to the fore here. Now, Rav Aviner himself is interesting, because Rav Aviner doesn't like Tcheles and would do everything that he could possibly do to tell you not to wear tcheles. When it comes to the issues here, though, he dances around try not to get wet between all the drops. He can't accept the middle position that I brought from Rav Soloveitchik, that there's some kind of kedusha to the masoret, to the way things were. The way things were is the way things should be and the way things have to be, and we can never change from them. Why can't he accept that? I would say almost psychologically. He's sitting in Beit El. His yeshiva is in the middle of the West Bank. He's a Zionist through and through. He believes in the Medina, he believes in Eretz Yisrael, and he believes in Rav Kook, and he believes in everything that that has been going on for 100 years in terms of the Shivat Zion. What are you going to tell him now that, according to Halacha, all we have is what was and what we should try to be like they were 100 years ago, and 150 years ago, and 1,000 years ago? To somebody like Rav Aviner, that isn't even something that you could entertain as a possibility. And so that is not even discussed. In all of the arguments back and forth, that is not even entertained as a possibility. And it's interesting that I've never heard that position put forth by any Rav in Eretz Yisrael. Only Rabbanim here in America would make that position in the very extreme. That anything that was, that's all that we have to do. We cannot think for ourselves to change anything, chas v'shalom. All we can do is keep towards the tradition of our... But on the other hand, Rav Aviner is actually trained to a certain degree in science. I think he has a degree in mathematics. And so he's bothered, certainly by the first position, that we don't treat science, that we don't believe that there's any validity to science. He's bothered by that. But he's even bothered by the second position of the fact that science is inadmissible, carte blanche, all the time. You're never allowed to use science. And talking to Rav Schechter this morning, he said that's a very, very, very difficult position. He said, you know, after 9/11, everybody who wrote, no matter what they wrote, at the bottom they said, but if there's DNA evidence, you can be Mata Diaguna. If there's evidence that a person died in that tragedy, by DNA evidence, everybody agreed, Rabbanim from right, left, wherever you were, everybody agreed that evidence is admissible. He says, of course, there's a 1 in 5 million chance that the DNA is going to be, is not going to belong to that person. So he said, of course everybody agrees to that. But according to this position, the butcher's position, we'll call it, right? It's inadmissible. He said that Rav Schechter felt that was very difficult, and I think Rav Aviner also feels that position is difficult. And so, Rav Aviner came up with a different position, which is perfect, because essentially it only applies to Treves. So it works beautifully. By the way, the reason why Treles is such an important test case for all of this is because, as I said in the title, it's halacha on the fringe, right? At the edge, really in an extreme position. There never has been yet any halacha that was completely lost to tradition that now we have the opportunity to bring back. Mirtz Hashem, there will be more. Beis HaMikdash will be built. We'll have to figure out how to do the avodah. There'll be a lot of questions that we have maybe one day. But so far, this is the only thing that was completely lost. All the halachas of Trumas and Maisers and Shemitah and all those things, they weren't widely observed, but they were observed by some people. There's always, people eat grasshoppers, not everybody, but a few people do. So there are always these little pockets, at least, where some people kept this or that. But not Treles. Now, and again, it's not like Karban Pesach, because it's not like people could have all along done it. This is an issue where you couldn't do it for 1,300 years. Nobody knew what to do. Simply nothing. You didn't know anything about it. And now you have the opportunity. So it's very, very unique in that case. And that's why here it becomes such an interesting. So what does Rav Aviner do? Aviner says like this. When it comes to science of today, DNA evidence, you want to go outside and you want to see if the sun is up or if the meat is salty. He says that's ridiculous to say that I can't use that evidence. It's like saying, I want to know if it's Zman Kriya Shema, so I go and look outside if the sun is up. Ah, can't use that evidence scientifically. Right. He goes, that's absurd. You can't say that. He said, but there is a difference between certain types of scientific evidence and other types. Scientists, where you go out and you measure and you observe and you see, that's mutter. Anything that is based on historical reconstruction of what was in the past, by its very nature, will always be missing crucial and important information. You'll never know the context. You'll never know exactly what they knew and what they saw and how they worked and how they did. So was this snail the real snail for Treves? You have a lot of evidence, but there's a lot that you don't know. Was this the color? You can make this argument or that argument, but you can't be sure. It says, in the case of scientific evidence of today, I can use it. Because that, he says, I can believe that because it's absolutely certain. Historical, inadmissible, because by its very nature, it's only, and he uses these words, it's only a theory, and if it's only a theory, halacha doesn't allow you to rely on it. Now, I think that this is brilliant, ingenious. Is there any source that Rav Avinair brings down? No, he doesn't bring a makor. He doesn't explain why you should believe that should be the case, why you should make a distinction between science that you can see and evidence in a test tube and evidence that you have from carbon dating. He doesn't bring a distinction between that. He doesn't bring a distinction between the fact, this is a very important fact I'll tell you as a scientist. A theory is a theory, and even today when you're looking at DNA, it's based on quite a number of assumptions, right? Which very many of them could easily be overturned potentially. We're not absolutely 100% sure about anything. So to make that distinction and say, today what I look at, I know 100%. What I'm looking at in the past, I only know 90%, and therefore I'm not
Shiurim very based on archaeology?
What?
Shiurim based on archaeology. That would also fall into
Shiurim based on archaeology. Well, I have another source here. I just want to point out, I'm not going to get to it. There's a fascinating source here, the Beis Yosef, this one over here, where the Beis Yosef quotes, I think it's a Rashba here, that in the issue of the order of the Parshiot in Tefillin, something caved in the Kever Yechezkel, and they found Tefillin from hundreds of years before in Eretz Yisrael, and the Rashba claimed on the basis of that Tefillin, that's the way he paskened the order of Rabbeinu Tam Rashi. So this seems to be an absolute proof that you can use archaeological evidence to put a halacha in. Hold on a second.
What about Rosh Chodesh?
Rosh Chodesh in the sense that we go out and you see
that we used to go out and look at the moon in Yerushalayim. Now we use a calendar based on the scientific evidence of the past.
No,
you could argue the opposite from that. You could argue the opposite. The molad that we use is usually off by 2-3 days. So now what are we going to do? Now you see, there is an example of the fact that you don't use scientific evidence. But that, I think, again, I don't think that that's an issue.
Why is it making it specific?
See, that's a very, very good point. According to Rav Avinair, it's not even a suffix. Where does it come from? I don't know. I'm not going to deny the fact that it's a brilliant Kiddush. Where does he get it from?
I understand that it's not clear proof because you could say, Iker Chasmer and Sef, we don't know exactly what the process was, we don't know exactly what the color was, we don't know exactly anything.
Right.
But we have some evidence. Now, that's the definition
of
suffix.
He would claim that evidence, it's not a question of the evidence is lacking. That evidence, he would claim in that respect, he kind of mixes this all together. Evidence from the past, inadmissible completely. It's dreams. It's lo ma'alin v'lo moridin. Evidence from the present, perfectly acceptable and legitimate. Very, very interesting. I want to quote two things before I come back to the questions because I would like to have these two little quotes. And then I'm here to answer questions. I'll be at the Y book sale afterwards. The first is a quote. I heard it on the way in today. And I would say that to many people, this is a quote from a Protestant theologian, so it's probably inadmissible in halacha completely. Probably it's even worse than inadmissible, but it was so beautiful that I felt I should say it anyway. It's Benjamin Warfield in the early 20th century writes, "We must not assume an attitude of antagonism towards the truths of reason or the truths of science. As children of the light, we must be careful to keep ourselves open to every ray of light." That's exactly what Rav Shmuel was saying. Torat emet. And, you know, to say to many, many rabbanim, truth is there, Torah is there, and never the twain shall meet, is a very, very, very difficult position for people to accept. And I think that was put very nicely. Another thing I want to end with is a story which would sum this up in a very beautiful way. I had a tremendous chus many years ago as part of a different life when I used to be a software developer to work on the database of the Boston Rebbe. And I was actually mamash for a few weeks of Ben Byatt working in his apartment with his daughter on their database, and you can imagine a Hasidic Rebbe needs a very good database. It's got a lot of information. He's got to keep it accessible. Not the Boston Rebbe from Boston, the Boston Rebbe from Borough Park. From Borough Park. Who lived in Efrat for many years. He had a summer home there. Anyway, of course, with an opening like that, how could I not? I gave the Rebbe all of the information about Tcheles, and I said, you know, what did Rebbe think about these ideas? And he took them from me, and a few days later he came back and he said to me, you know, Baruch, I was up all night last night. Couldn't sleep. Said I couldn't sleep because I had such pressure. He had two weights. On one shoulder, he said, I had the weight of tradition. For 1,300 years, people have been wearing talesim, tzaddikim, martyrs, chachamim, plain Jews have been wearing a talis, and it had white strings on those talis. What is more ingrained in our psyche than a picture of a Rebbe pouring his heart out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu wearing white tzitzis? That is what we see when we think about all of those years, hundreds of years. On the other hand, he said, I felt this weight. Every day I say in the Shema, the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Rabbi Akiva kept, and for 1,300 years nobody was able to keep, and now I can keep it. So I felt these two weights pulling down on me. I couldn't sleep. He said, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do, and I'm not going to tell you what you should do, but I will say this. Any person who approaches this topic has to feel both ways. If you're not going to take seriously the fact that you're changing from one of the most fundamental traditions, that's not good. On the other hand, if you're not going to at least weigh the evidence and look at it and think, maybe this is right, maybe this is correct, that's also not right. Look at both sides, weigh them carefully, consider them, take them both and treat them both very, very, very seriously, and then do whatever you do, as long as you feel both of those ways. And I think that is a very wonderful and healthy attitude that everybody should have. Chas v'shalom, we should not be in any way being mezalzel on the tradition that we have. On the other hand, traditions are important. You know, as Newton said, Aristotle is my friend, but truth is my best friend. I would say that tradition is our friend, but the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to, at the end of the day, be our best friend, and that's what we need to consider.